The Bloodstream podcast is made possible by Takeda and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please consult with professionals before making any healthcare decisions.
Our mission is to create opportunities for thousands of deserving young people to reach their full potential as students, as athletes, and as positive leaders.
That voice belongs to Greg's dad. What? Yes, producer Greg's dad, also known as Kenny Holdsman. He is the president and CEO of Philly Youth Basketball, and he joins Amy for a Believe 19 interview a bit later in the program because this, listeners, is our Thanksgiving special. And what better way to honor a Thanksgiving special than to have a family member on the pod? By the way, hello and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast. It's a weekly show serving the bleeding disorders community with entertainment and information. I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch, joined as I am each week by none other than my colleague, friend, and co-host, Amy Board. Hello, Amy.
Hello. Excited about Greg's dad? I realize he has a very fancy title, and he's actually thebomb.com. Like, wait until you hear what he has done in Philly, and he's terrific. He's also Greg's dad.
And as it is the fourth Friday of the month, we are also joined by my wife, roommate, co-host, and the increasingly pregnant Natalie Rose Lynch. Natalie Rose, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your brevity. Guys, happy Thanksgiving. This episode's coming up. It's the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday for some. I don't know. I know once in my life I went with my mom to like Macy's at 5 a.m. for Black Friday, but otherwise I never participated in that. I don't know if you guys ever have
participated. I had a season where my brother and I would go to Eddie Bauer on Black Friday because all of their First Descent, you know, like fancy like coats and things, like outdoor things, were 40% off, and they never were the rest of the year. And so we made it like a tradition. We would get them so early just to do that. Like, that was a part of the dumbness. But there was like 3 or 4 years where my brother and my sister-in-law, we would get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and go to Eddie Bauer and buy coats and vests, down
nice.
Coats and vests.
That sounds like a family tradition. Did you ever have a Black Friday, Eddie Bauer, coats and vests kind of thing in your family growing up, Natalie?
No, we're not a Black Friday family. We're anti-Black Friday.
What does it mean to be anti-Black Friday?
I mean, just like never participated, never were interested, kind of scoffed at it, you know, that kind of family. But not the kind of family who runs the 5Ks on Thanksgiving. So somewhere in the middle between the 5K family and the Black Friday family, we kind of live there.
I think like my Black Friday experience, I ran one 5K on the Friday after Thanksgiving. So I've gone to a Macy's at 5 a.m. once, and I've run one 5K. So I'm a dabbler. I'm a Black Friday just kind of dabbler. I like to dip a toe in and then get right on out. But we wanted to today just kind of get together to share a little bit about what we're grateful for this year and what we're thinking about around this Thanksgiving time. As we talked about last week on the pod with all the holiday stuff, the holidays feel different this year. But nonetheless, we want to make sure that we're doing what we can to keep up the holiday spirit for Natalie and I, as we've talked about. You know, we have a baby on the way. We certainly don't want to be taking a dip in like what it means to be a family around the holidays. We want to keep building momentum for baby to be. So that's why we're here, just to chat a little bit about holidays with you all. And I want to say thank you to the sponsor who made this segment possible, Genentech. And they've got something that they want to let the world know, and that is this. The hemophilia community has game. Uh-huh. Introducing the Bloodless Battle, the first ever hemophilia esports event. That's pretty cool. The first ever hemophilia esports event on Twitch Rivals, brought to you by Genentech. You can watch Heme Gamers, which I am not. I can't even say it. Watch Heme Gamers duke it out in an epic showdown. The event will be hosted by celebrity magician Justin Wilmot. I got to get him on this show at some point, who will try to keep... How have we not had him like by now, right?
Greg, I don't know.
We got to talk about this.
I don't know. Make a note. Greg, make a note.
He's going to try to keep sweating to a minimum. That's why I can't participate. The Bloodless Battle takes place December 1st. It's coming up quick. And you can click the link in the program notes for the full schedule. And remember, there's more for the hemophilia community to see at GenentechHemophilia.com. The Bloodless Battle, December 1st. That sounds pretty fun. I am going to have to be checking that out, because that's That's
also,
not every day.
Heme gamers, like heme gamers, identify yourself. Like, I want to know who you are.
Step forward from the fold.
I want to know your stuff. You can find me on social media. I legitimately want to know because I bet there's a lot of heme gamers. I mean, gaming is a great thing to do when you're like sitting and like icing. You have a bleed or something. I bet that's legit.
For sure. Yeah, my brother and I growing up, I mean, video games have not been a big part of my life in about 20 years, but they were for years before that. And exactly what you're saying, Amy, it was a way to stay controlled, stay seated, and for the two of us to do something where we were engaged for hours. Like, if I was my mom and my grandma, yeah, I would have been pushing video games too.
100%.
I mean, you 100%. Can get back into it.
Shout out to all the parents. Shout out to all your parents. Just a small shout out.
I was going to say, you can get back into it. It's called the bloodless battle, not the sweatless battle. So, you know, I know you would get all worked up and get sweaty, but that doesn't discount you.
That's true. I appreciate that. You know, maybe I should check out the bloodless battle, try to see how much sweating is actually going on. And then next year or whenever Bloodless Battle 2 happens, you know, then maybe I'll be ready. But I stink at video games, so I can't compete. I'd have to, like, legit train. I'd have to legit, like, which,
train?
I don't know. I know. And a training at this point for a video game thing, it just I don't think that's where I'm at in life. But that's not why we're here. Thank you for Genentech for making this segment possible and for making the Bloodless Battle possible. Link in the program notes. But we're here to talk about the holidays. So, Natalie, I wanted to turn to you to kick us off with what's on your mind and maybe a question you could share with the group as it relates to Thanksgiving and the holiday season.
Well, like you said, it is a very weird year and making for a weird holiday season. So I guess the question I have for you guys is, what is one direct impact from the pandemic that you're grateful for?
Ooh. That's a great question.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll go first real quick and say, and I've said this before, it's not, but like the time with you and the time with Russell and the time with the pregnancy and just being able to be grounded during what for me personally has been a very nesty time of my life. You know, it just is convenient how that worked out, but I'm very grateful for it because I don't know any other period of life that would have afforded me such time to be a part of our puppy's development, to be as present as I've been for the first 27 weeks of our pregnancy. I'm super grateful for that. And I know it comes at such an unfortunate reason, but on the personal level, I've tried to maintain that gratitude all throughout as a means of staying sane, frankly, as well as being thankful for what is good.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of where I fall too. You know, up until this year, our relationship, like one of us had been on the road at least half the month. So there was a lot of ships passing in the night. And I think like the number of nights and dinners we've had together this year has been amazing and would not have come about. Like we're the type of people who needed to be forced, thrust upon us to keep us still. But the stillness has been, I feel very grateful for it. What about you, Amy?
100% the same thing. You know, I was in a relatively new relationship coming into the pandemic, and it was a wonderful relationship, but we traveled all the time. We were just go, 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 go. And it enabled us to find rhythms that I think we would have been able to find, you know, years and years from now. You know, just things like, sounds ridiculous, but we both, for the longest time when we traveled and we first got together, we still ate like our single people meals. Like we didn't cook together a lot. And it was just out of habit. And we would have these long days and we just didn't want to think about it. And quarantine forced us to, I started cooking and it's been this wonderful, you know, cathartic thing at the end of the day. It's so much more fun cooking for two than it is for one. And like we have this little evening routine where we put on records and we cook and Rob does the dishes, you know, it's very domestic. And I just don't think we would have found that rhythm without this time, just like you said, this like forced stillness. And when the world opens again and we start our lives again, I think we'll be able to fall into this, you know, when we're together so much more easily. And it's been really lovely. It's been really, really lovely, actually. And I'm an introvert, actually. So it's been my joke, like, quarantine is my Coachella. Like, this is great.
I think a lot of people feel that way. Greg, what about you?
Yeah, well, I think direct impact, you know, I've been able to come home to Philly several times or a few times for an extended period. And this most recent time particularly is meaningful. Not to get too over emotional or sad, my dog was diagnosed with terminal cancer. It's been a month. They gave him a month. He's still holding up pretty well, so knock on wood with that. But if not for COVID, I would not have been able to spend, you know, the end of his life with him. So that's been incredibly meaningful for me. I can't imagine it any other way, to be honest. And just spending more time with family. You know, I had moved to LA in mid-December of 2019, which was a good thing for me. And I eventually do want to move, you know, away from my family and out of my house. But during the pandemic, when you have a lot of time to think about yourself and your flaws, and I won't get into any of that, I'll save that for my therapist. But, you know, to be able to be home with family and be reminded that you have unconditional love, regardless of how you see yourself, is pretty special.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks for that answer, Greg. That's awesome. And it is. I think it's been, the stillness has required, it's been forced reflection for us as individuals, for us as a nation. And, you know, there's less distraction when you're running around and you're doing all these social events. You can distract yourself from what you need to work on internally. And so I think it's brought up a lot for a lot of people. And that's been horrifying for some humans and really clarifying for others. But Amy, do you have a question for us?
Yeah. Do you all remember, Greg's going to be like, Amy, I can't believe this. Do you remember the first Thanksgiving that you spent away from home? Like when you were younger, when you were in college, and what was that experience like? Was there freedom there? Did you freak out? What was it like? Or was it insignificant?
So I remember the first one was in college. The first couple of years was able to come home, but then I was in theater school and I was in plays and in shows, and shows are generally going on during the holidays because that's when people go to shows. So I was in school and then in Boston across a lot of the holidays. And my first Thanksgiving, I stayed with my friend Jared, who I've recently been reconnecting with quite a bit. Shout out to Jared and his family out in Massachusetts. It was a big family, and I come from a small family, so just like staying in a house where there was like 15 people and another 15 were coming over the next morning, I was like, oh God, where? Okay, so I'll be in the den over here. Okay, so I don't know exactly what happened, but at some point in the night, I guess I was a little cold, so I decided to turn the heat on, but I was in a completely sealed off like den area. So evidently, the next morning, when the door was opened, it was like roasting hot. I was a sweaty mess on the couch, and my friend's grandfather just came over and was like, hey, wake up. And I was like, hello. And I was a sweaty mess. And he went over to Jared and was like, oh, your friend, something's wrong with your friend. But apparently I just didn't know how to work a thermostat. So I made it like 89 degrees in this room that had total insulation. So that's what I did my first Thanksgiving. I cooked myself. Pretty proud of that.
That was very good. I want that to be like the tagline for this episode. Patrick cooked himself. That's funny.
I'm trying to think. I, you know, when you said that, I was like, oh, did I? I went home every Thanksgiving in college, but I did. My college roommate, flights to St. Louis one year were so expensive, so she came home with me. And a very similar experience that Patrick had. Like I, you know, my mom has six siblings. I'm one of like 25 grandkids. Like, the holidays are huge, and my friend just like trying to remember everyone's names, and like, and she's so gracious, and it was really like, she really just set the bar high for like anyone else I'd be bringing home, of like the ability to just like blend in and like be a part of the family. But then I'm like, wait, okay, when was the first Thanksgiving I've spent away from my family? And I have a pretty enmeshed family, so I'm like, was it like recent? But yeah, I was in New York, and I don't remember. I think, again, like maybe flights were expensive and the road conditions were bad, but my siblings lived in New York with me. I moved to New York in 2004. My sister moved there in 2006. My brother came in 2008. So even though I wasn't with, like, we weren't with our mom and dad, we had Thanksgiving at my apartment. And it was my my sister and her now husband, my brother, my then boyfriend, a couple of friends. And then I had a few foreign friends who we decided to adopt who had never had a Thanksgiving. So my first Thanksgiving away was also some people's very first Thanksgiving. And it was a really, really fun night. In fact, my brother-in-law had so much fun, he passed out before dinner. It was that kind of night. Shout out to Kevin.
I think I've been that guy before. I think I've been the, like, I'm not going to make it to dinner party guest in my life. I think I've been there.
Mine was traumatic.
What happened?
Like, trauma. And it was so stupidly traumatic. Like, so dumb. In retrospect, thinking about it, I'm horrified that this was why I was traumatized. But it was my freshman year of college. I went to school in Michigan. I was from Colorado. So it was just kind of impossible to go home for Thanksgiving just because it was so expensive. And I went to, very lovingly, my very close friend that I made freshman year, shout out to Mia Gauchi, now Mia Slager, who is still pals and probably will listen to this when I tell her that I name dropped her, she invited me to her home and I went home and it was lovely. She grew up in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, so it was a beautiful house. But what was so traumatizing was, this is so embarrassing, was the gravy. They had gravy that was like, it tasted very different from the very Midwest, from a packaged gravy that my mom always made. Like, it was probably like fancy gravy, to tell you the truth. Like, it was probably actual gravy. And it was so disappointing for some reason for my 19-year-old soul that I cried to my mom. I was like, I just missed the gravy, which my mom found ridiculous. But now it's like a thing. Like, I think my mom was traumatized that she's like, I can't make anything other than this, like, packaged gravy.
That's amazing. I came from a canned cranberry sauce family, and I loved canned cranberry sauce. So, like, when people take the time to make, like, real homemade organic cranberry sauce, I'm like, what is this shit?
Okay, you just made me feel better. Okay, great.
So on a slightly differently, the another college Thanksgiving was at my girlfriend at the time's grandmother's house, and I got a lot of reminders going into that I was not allowed to pour barbecue sauce over all of the food. I had so many just like, I know you're obsessed with barbecue sauce. I don't know how you'll feel about any of this food. You cannot put barbecue sauce on any of the Thanksgiving food that my grandmother and my 92-year-old grandfather and these other people are making. And I was like, I got it. But I had so many reminders. And I'll be honest, I never asked for it because I had a lot of reminders. But as I was sitting there, the thought went through my head, you know, if I had some barbecue sauce. But I was like, there's no way I'm bringing that up.
That is so revealing. Have you outgrown that? Because I'll be on it. Rob has not outgrown that. Rob puts ranch on everything.
I have not outgrown that, no. I still put barbecue sauce and less so ketchup now, but still a lot of ketchup. So, yeah, I'm a child. It used to be a running joke with Ryan and I when we would go to these hemophilia meetings back in the day. It was just the two of us, and we're like, we were getting to know each other. Because whenever we would go to the food bar or whatever it would be, you know, he'd get something that looked like an adult. There's like a protein, there's a vegetable, there's a side salad. And I'd be like, here's some chicken fingers, a pizza, a whole lot of French, actually double down on the French fries. And that would be the plate I'd carry back over for, like, you know, the health and wellness workshop. And I'm like, oh gosh, But, you know, I is who I is. I don't know what to tell you. I have a question for you guys. What's the most bizarre or unusual Thanksgiving that you have ever experienced? Most bizarre or unusual? It could be an entire Thanksgiving, or it could be a moment. I love these pensive looks, searching deep in the recesses of their memories.
I mean, like, mine was interrupted by tragedy. my parents came up to New York to visit us for a Thanksgiving, my brother, sister, and I, and we got a call that, like, my grandpa was dying. And so even though we had, like, this intimate family planned in New York, all of us, we all ended up back in Ohio, which is like kind of funny because part of the reason they came up was like, well, it's easier for two people to travel up than three people to travel to Ohio. And then five of us ended up going back to Ohio. And he ended up not dying, which, I mean, was good. He ended up dying a few months later, but it was like one of those moments where it was like, you got to come home. Grandpa's dying like tonight. And we got there and he didn't. So I guess that kind of falls under the umbrella of bizarre or like different Thanksgivings.
Yeah, I would say that qualifies the death watch that didn't need to be. But, you know, it is a reminder at the end of the day, too. It is just another day on the calendar, right? Like anything can happen and you just might have to deal with it. And it's Thanksgiving. I mean, we've been in that position, I know, with like travel stuff. And it's like, oh, right, it's Thanksgiving, but we're just travel, or, you know, or it's President's Day, or it's, but sometimes life just happens. Amy, do you have a bizarre or unusual memory that comes to mind?
No, which is terrible. Like I am straining. Like if, oh my, I'm
straining.
And this is the thing that's horrible. And I'm going to out my dad. The only thing that popped in my head was one time my dad was trying to, you know, like cut up the bird, and he, I don't remember what happened, but something slipped and like his string of profanity was so intense. But I just don't feel like that's bizarre. I feel like that's very normal. Like that's a very normal Thanksgiving, but that's the only thing that popped into my head. So I'm outing my dad.
That's okay. About that.
I mean, we had to like talk it out because I got mad at it. It was like a whole thing, but I don't remember. And you know what stinks? It's going to come to me after this episode, or my mom's going to listen to this and be like, you should have said this.
Why didn't you bring this up? Bizarre stories are kind of also always good. So if you remember your bizarre Thanksgiving story in January or February, Amy, you just throw it right in the show outline and we're going to talk about it, okay? No matter
Totes.
What.
Totes.
I once went to a Thanksgiving for another person I was dating at her Thanksgiving. And again, I come from a small family, so these big family Thanksgiving traditions are a little intimidating to me to begin with. And her family, very, I'll just say proper in a lot of ways. And we were at this big house, a lot of family there. Everyone's sitting down. There's a lot of silverware, a lot of napkins, a lot of plates, one of those kind of things. But then after all that, they started a game, I guess it's a tradition, where people would bring out these tubs of corks from wine bottles, and then everybody would proceed to grab the corks as though it was like ammo on your way to war. Because you were on your way to war, the next thing was to go spread around the house and just fire corks at each other for an undefined amount of time. There were no teams, there was no objective, just pain, embarrassment, and the potential for a lot of broken glass. And I was like, I'm into this. I'm definitely into this. But this is what, and I didn't have a heads up. It was just like happening. And I was like with a 12-year-old, you know, so sort of like, all right, I think I'm good because I'm with a 12-year-old. I feel like you're probably like one of the top three draft picks in this thing. On the other hand, I don't know how far we're supposed to go. And you're definitely one of the people who could go too far. I am not of the people here. I'm a guest. So don't get me in too much trouble. But he did okay. So we stuck together. The weirdest, though, were like the grandparents and the great uncles and like the folks in their 60s and 70s who are coming out of bedrooms with corks and just firing them away. And I was like, this is not, again, fun and I think I'm into it, but I needed time to prepare. I wasn't ready to process that after cranberry sauce. I just thought it was too much. So that's what's on my list. It's the cork war is the
and
weirdest.
Corks. Like not something that's like fun, you know, like Nerf guns. My no. boyfriend's family has a Nerf gun war every Christmas, and it's very charming because it's Nerf guns. Like they buy them Nerf guns, and
right.
we have like it's like it's battle, and it's great, but it's charming because it's Nerf guns.
Right, as opposed
Corks.
To hey, once we've had all this wine and aren't sober anymore, why don't we throw these little dense things at each other?
Wow.
Yeah, and there were dogs in the house, and there's dogs chewing up the corks. It was a whole thing, but yeah. That's why it's on my list for...
I love it.
Thank you. Maybe it's a new tradition that we can start. We'll talk about it. Mr. Holdsman, did you have a question for the group that you wanted to ask before we close out our segment?
I guess on a little more of a lighthearted note, favorite Thanksgiving dish?
That's a great one. I will say that for me, it's anything that includes marshmallows. So, you know,
shocker.
Yeah, That's the best. And when I'm doing reheats, I'm like, let me get that sweet potato marshmallow thing over here. I'm going to get a lot of that. I'll take a piece of turkey, a couple of string beans, and some more marshmallows. That's what my reheat plates look like.
That's great. I think there's only one correct answer to this question, and it is the leftover sandwich that you make the next day out of all of the ingredients put together. In my humble opinion, I feel very strong
day,
about it, and it's fine. We can fight about it. Nat, what is your favorite?
The next day, dish? That's the 10 p.m., Sammy.
Wait, touche, Natalie. Wow. I repent for my answer. That is absolutely correct. Not even 10 p.m. Let's go like 6 p.m. football.
Yeah.
Like 2 hours after the meal. Touche. Pumpkin pie for breakfast on Friday. Absolutely. Let's do this.
Pumpkin pie for breakfast. Now you're talking. What is your favorite Thanksgiving dish? I should probably know this.
Oh my gosh. I am a GBC fan. And for those of you who don't know, that is green bean casserole.
What?
I love me some green bean casserole. I always have. I always will. And don't try to fancify it. We got to have that Campbell's cream of mushroom. We have to have those canned beans. And we have to have those crispy onions on top. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I mean, I make it throughout the
year. That's my girl. It's my Midwest girl right there. Ohio, bringing it home. Woo!
So yum. So yum. Greg, since you threw out the question, what's your favorite yum-yum? Thanksgiving yum-yum.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Patrick. The sweet potatoes with the marshmallows. I mean, I don't know why they're not incorporated into more daily meals or other holidays. It's a once-a-year thing, but it's absolutely delicious. I would say stuffing. Also, speaking of Amy's leftovers, stuffing as a leftover on sandwiches is fantastic. So it's a tough call. It's a tie between stuffing and the sweet potato with the marshmallows.
Hey, this is Ryan Geelan. I am the co-founder and chief creative officer at Believe. And I am grateful in 2020 for, I'll go ahead and mention one professional thing and one personal thing. Professionally, I'm incredibly grateful for how focused and committed all of our team members are, from leadership all the way over to folks who just joined the team, you know, a month or two before the pandemic and the lockdown hit. As we transitioned to entirely virtual workspace for 9 straight months, everybody has just continued to hustle and work incredibly hard to serve the bleeding disorders and rare disease community. And with all sincerity, that has kept me so motivated just to try and keep up with our team and to try to keep them inspired, because it's just an incredible collection of creative people and hard workers. And on a personal level, I'm really grateful for my new baby, who was born 1 week before we went entirely virtual and went into our first lockdown. Which was on March 6th. He was born March 13th. We went into lockdown, having to put aside the pain and frustration and anger and fear around the pandemic in order to just sort of raise this little baby who has no idea what's going on. And his older brother, who's 3 years old, who also kind of has no idea what's going on, has actually been a real gift to me and to my wife, because so much of our energy has had to go into that. And it's, those are two really big silver linings among all of this, is just the joy of having this new addition to the family and the inspiration of having an incredible team at the company. I'm so glad we're doing this. So I guess this is my third gratitude. I'm grateful to Patrick and Greg and Amy and everybody on the podcast for coming up with this awesome idea. I can't wait to hear what everybody else is grateful for.
Hi, I'm Avra, and I am the social media manager at Believe. And the running joke is also that I do 1,000 things. So I guess not just that. I am really grateful that I've gotten to spend a lot of time with family this year and my dog, and in some ways have less day-to-day stress than usual. In some ways, definitely more, and that everyone has stayed healthy and sometimes happy, and that I get to continue to work at Believe and we've made everything work. So while some things did go virtual, at least we're still doing them and it's still happening.
Hey, this is Rob Bradford, lead producer at Believe Limited. And I think what I am most grateful for this year in 2020 is that we at Believe get to continue doing what we do. You know, this year has been so unfortunate for many people when it comes to jobs and housing and certainly in health. And I think that, you know, we at Believe are all counting our lucky stars that we still get to tell the stories we get to tell and to share them with you all. We all, you know, cherish the ability to do what we're doing. And so, yeah, I'm just super grateful that we get to keep doing that. And it really means a lot to all of us, I know. Man, other than that, I guess, you know, my fantasy football team is doing really well. And who would have thought, I auto-drafted. I don't really know what I'm doing. And unbelievably, I'm winning, which is crazy. I don't know. 2020 does have some upsides. So I guess those are the two things. Thank you all for listening and thank you all for supporting Bloodstream.
Hi, this is Jessica Richmond, or Jay Rich. I am a writer and producer with Believe Limited. You'll also hear me as one of the hosts on Flow, Bloodstream Media's new podcast about menstruation. 2020, I am most grateful for the cast of Hemophilia, the Zoomsicle, the committed group of teens that I had the privilege of working with this spring and summer remotely. And while we were all remotely connecting in this increasingly virtual world, these teens affected by rare bleeding disorders came together early mornings to sing, to learn zoomography, to learn breathing exercises that can help keep one grounded in this increasingly changing world, and most importantly, to connect. Even though we weren't in the same physical proximity, I felt surrounded by the beauty and the brilliance of theater.
This is Josh, the creative director at Believe Limited, and also the host of a new podcast called Haunting Season. And I've been able to launch this new podcast with Believe Limited because of the creativity that everyone on our team has been able to bring during this pandemic. That's what I'm truly grateful for, is that everyone has just brought their A game and helped us pivot all of our content to be digital this year and not lose any quality. We've got some amazing people on our team, and luckily everyone's been super healthy throughout this so far. This is me knocking on wood. That's what I'm grateful for.
Hey, I'm Colby, audio engineer and editor at Believe Limited. Although this year has been very challenging for everyone, I feel like I have a lot to be grateful for. I really, really dig in the extra time that I've had to spend in my garden. I have way too many succulents now. But yeah, I'm really amazed at the leadership that's come from the challenges of this year. And the pandemic has really pushed us to be creative and strong, to stand up for people and what we believe, and to really take the time to reflect inwardly. I've matured, I feel like, personally this year, and I'm really thankful for the people on our team in particular, because we've been there for each other and we're there to talk and to laugh and to cry together, and that's what I'm grateful for.
All right, this was fun. We could keep doing this, but we should, eventually move forward because we have a really cool interview to get to. And Amy, if you would, please tell us a little bit about what we are about to hear.
This is another segment for our Believe 19 series, and it's an interview with Greg's dad, Kenny Holzman, from Philly Youth Basketball, Philadelphia Youth Basketball, terrific organization that does work with the youth in Philly. So I'm excited for you to hear more about the organization and Greg's dad.
Greg, was it weird that your dad came on the podcast?
Talk a lot. I'm not sure if I'll be, besides the edit, I'm not sure if I'll be listening back to this episode because of that. But no, my dad works incredibly hard. I've seen him firsthand, you know, bust his behind to make this organization what it is for the last 5+ years. I'm really proud of him. And I believe in the power of sport for social change. And I think PYB, Philly Youth Basketball, is doing just that. So I was really happy to have him come on the podcast.
I don't know if he had the job yet or if it was like month one, it wasn't past that. And I remember there was some like one sentence question that Greg emailed me, and I sent him back, you know, about 15 sentences of a response that probably ended with like, I don't know, what do you think? And at some point I was like, I'm sorry, that was probably so not helpful. And he's like, eh, I get it. You remind me a lot of my dad. And I was like, okay. I think that's good. I don't know. But as long as you know how to work with me, then I think we'll be okay. So
I think I meant that in a more positive way than the way I just spun the way I hear my dad talk now. But again, pandemic, being with the family a lot, things, perspective changes.
Fair enough.
He's definitely a CEO. Kenny Holdsman is definitely a CEO. Like, he sees big picture, he sees vision, and he's obviously a very inspiring leader. And so he's a terrific interview. And I don't know if I give him crap about being Greg's dad if we'll actually make it into the interview, but here's hoping. Fingers crossed.
All right, so let's get into it. Here's the interview with Greg's dad, Kenny Holdsman.
So our organization began 5 years ago, Philadelphia Youth Basketball. It is a youth development and community empowerment program. And our mission is to create opportunities for thousands of deserving young people to reach their full potential as students, as athletes, and as positive leaders. We serve about 1,000 kids with academic engagement, leadership development, health and nutrition, of course, basketball, and the overwhelming amount of the program staff are Black men and women from the very same communities as our kids. So we're not a player development program in a sense that our mission is not to build great basketball players, although we take pride in that part of our work. It's really about giving, you know, young people an opportunity to build really positive and deep relationships with school and learning, with peers and adults, with community, and with, you know, how they perceive their future trajectory.
Your staff, looking at the website, your staff seems robust, and the word mentorship kept sticking out to me. What does the concept of mentorship mean to the organization and your staff?
Yeah, that's a great question. It means a lot of things. In fact, we're about to build a really large $25 million center. And one of the, I think, the most understated elements in our center is going to be all these small conferencing pods where mentors and elders can have real conversations with kids about meaningful things. So for us, you know, mentorship is, it's role modeling. It's having people who are deeply trained and invested in kids, giving them a platform to get really immersed in the lives of those kids. And when young people see, you know, men and women who are in college or in their 20s, and they have overcome the, you know, the same circumstances as our kids are contending with, and they've gotten on the rails and gotten to college and graduated and are, you know, doing meaningful things in their careers and in their communities, you know, that degree of I guess I would call it, Amy, like cultural relatability. Wow, that person cares about me. I matter. That person can relate to what it is that I'm going through. And that's not to say you or me or Greg wouldn't be deeply influential with, you know, a sixth grade kid, you know, growing up in North or West Philly. We could be. But that added ingredient of trust and this cultural relatability is a huge piece of what our staff brings. The other piece of this is doing things that are not cool and trendy. So sadly, in a lot of, you know, lower income, under-resourced communities of color, for school-age kids, like getting immersed intellectually and academically is not considered all that fashionable. In fact, it's cutting against the grain. So when our you know, we call them coach mentors. So they're both coaches, but also academic mentors. When they are reading with our young people a sport and society essay that a well-known athlete has written in the Players Tribune about a sport and social justice issue, and they're developing a point of view and writing about it and debating about it, that level of like critical thinking and, you know, learning can be empowering and can be liberating. That's a feature of what our young people get, not just from the content, but from the coaches and mentors. It's cool to cut against the grain in that way.
That's great. That's great. I love that. I love that the organization is about basketball, but the substance of it isn't necessarily about basketball. But programmatically, as you're designing, you know, this arena to build leadership and to build self-esteem and to build confidence, how do you guys utilize basketball to have better outcomes with your kids?
Yeah. So we have adopted a framework called SEL, social and emotional learning. And it's been popularized more in the in-school environment, but it's really applicable in our space, which is called the out-of-school time environment. And SEL attributes would be like esteem, feeling connected to a community, feeling like you've got the ability to build positive relationships with peers and adults, grit and resiliency, goal setting, the ability to set goals and then to access social capital to help you achieve those goals. Academic efficacy, which is a fancy term of meaning like I can be a competent and confident learner. So basketball is a good context for young people to acquire many of those SEL attributes. If you're on the court and your teammates are relying on you and your coach is, there's this immediate connection that you wouldn't get necessarily in an individual sport. If the team doesn't do well and there is a conversation afterwards about how you could be better and to analyze and evaluate, you know, what went wrong, it's a really good, you know, way to understand how to be resilient and how to be an active learner. So good context for that. But in our city, and you probably have gotten this from knowing Greg a little bit, basketball in Philly is iconic. It is ubiquitous. So unlike, let's say, an organization like Arthur Ashe that I used to lead before PYB, you know, basketball is low cultural barrier to entry and low financial barrier to entry. So we have, you know, Black families in our city who have been, you know, deeply involved with this game for 3 and 4 generations. And if people don't play, at least it's a part of the, you know, the cultural experience. So we're really trying to kind of optimize a game that is everywhere and powerful in our city, but to use it for higher and better social purposes, different than just, you know, athletic prowess.
How can our listeners contribute to the work that you guys are doing with Philly youth basketball?
Mm-hmm. So there's a number of ways. The quickest and easiest is going to our website and learning more about us, www.phillyyouthbasketball.org. Learn more, consider making a contribution. And I don't just mean financially, although that matters. We are doing some amazing work right now with older youth who have gotten involved with the criminal justice system, with a really core middle school age population who are struggling with identity and any number of issues. We're gonna build the premier youth development space in our country. So if people have ideas about how to optimize our teaching and learning, our center, the way in which we go about programming or community building. We love to get ideas and to pick up colleagues and fellow travelers, even if they're outside of Philadelphia.
Thank you again to Kenny Holtzman, Greg's dad from Philly Youth Basketball. Natalie, I have to throw it over to you for another Thanksgiving round before we end up and wrap up.
Yeah, I just had one more Thanksgiving story. So
yes.
I was thinking, you know, every year on Thanksgiving morning, we would have cinnamon rolls and we watched the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade as a family. And we loved this so much. It was a big part of our Thanksgiving. And my parents really, really wanted to surprise us. So I was in eighth grade. My sister was in sixth grade. My brother was in fourth grade. And as soon as the parade packed up, my dad said, "Now, doesn't that look like fun? Do you want to go pack your bags and drive to New York and go there?" And I was like, yes! And like, it was like all my dreams had come true. Like this thing I had been watching for years and years and years. And my sister starts bawling. And she... like not the reaction like parents like trying to surprise kids would want, like, and she ran and slammed her door and my parents are like, "What's wrong?" And she goes, "I'm not going. I was supposed to go cosmic bowling with Jared tomorrow." and it was just so funny. She was like so like preteen pissy about this surprise trip to New York that my parents had like obviously been so excited to share with us because she had plans to go cosmic bowling on Black Friday with her sixth grade boyfriend. So I just thought like that's a story that's retold and retold in our family a lot of, and we went to New York that weekend and it was awesome. And, but yeah, it was just a funny, funny Thanksgiving memory.
Do you know how many family plans have been canceled because a sixth grader needs to go cosmic bowling with her sixth grade boyfriend? Huge. Huge.
I'm sure.
Huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
That hit close to home.
Cosmic bowling. Never thought on the day after Thanksgiving. That 5Ks, Black Friday, cosmic bowling. That's one I did miss out on. Well, thank you for sharing that story. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Greg, for sharing your Thanksgiving stories and gratitudes as well. And that is all for this special Thanksgiving episode. Special thanks to everyone at Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited who makes the Bloodstream podcast possible. Thanks to our interview guest, Kenny Holtzman, Greg's dad, the CEO and president of Philly Youth Basketball, phillyyouthbasketball.org. Thanks as well to our presenting sponsor, Takeda, bleedingdisorders.com, to learn more about their resources and commitment. And thanks as well to our segment sponsor, Genentech. Check out genentechhemophilia.com. And don't forget about the Bloodless Battle coming up on December 1st. Follow links in the program notes for more. Subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast on Apple, Spotify, SoundCloud, everywhere you can. Leave us a rating. Why wouldn't you? And if you do, make it a good one, because otherwise why? Share this episode with a friend or a family member or a colleague or a neighbor, but maybe tell the neighbor a little bit about bleeding disorders first, or otherwise they might be confused. We cover a lot of topics. You gotta have at least one person in your orbit who's gotta find one of these relevant. Plus, word of mouth is the best way we reach new people, so word that mouth. Have a bleeding disorders or health topic you'd like us to discuss a little bit more? You want to inquire about a casting opportunity for Bloodstream's narrative and docu-styled podcast series? Just running out of great places to send emails? We've got you covered, don't we, Amy Board? You can email us at...
Mailbag at bloodstreammedia.com.
Connect with Bloodstream Media on social media. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Or you can follow Amy Board, Natalie Lynch, or Patrick James Lynch on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users out there. Check out the program notes for this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreammedia.com, where you'll find links and information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I am your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am your other host, Amy Board.
And I'm Natalie Lynch. Sometimes I'm your host, too.
And I'm your producer, Greg Holtzman.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.